Jim Dine moved to New York in the late 50s and helped shake up the art world. Along with Klaus Oldenburg, he created what became known as happenings, theater events that were forerunners of performance art. He created visual arts from found objects in the trash and was considered one of the early pop artists. But he's gone through many phases since then, taking inspiration from the natural world, classical art, and his own dreams. A retrospective called The Body and Its Metaphors is now touring Japan. A series of recent paintings is on view at the Pace Wildenstein Gallery in Manhattan. He created the series while living in Berlin. The paintings were inspired by a dream he had in Paris about an owl and a crow. He told me about his personal associations with these birds.
In America, crows, unhappily, are called Jim, you know? And so am I. And as when I was a kid, there was a crow at the zoo who would speak to me, literally, because you can teach crows to talk a little bit, and it would speak to me. But fortunately, when it spoke to me, I was 5 years old or 4 years old, it would say, "Hello, Jimmy," which is what my family called me. And it was very important to me. And I also am aware of ravens and crows everywhere I go. I'm extremely interested in them and what they can do, their habits of playing and tricksterism and their intelligence. The owl was, Athena's friend, and the owl in the dream was very much a female, and an important presence to me.
Mm-hmm. You grew up in Cincinnati, arrived in New York in the late 1950s. What did you find most interesting about New York and what you were seeing in terms of art in New York when you got there?
I came to New York because it seemed to me the only place that what I had in my mind to do could take place. It certainly could not have taken place in Cincinnati, a provincial city, a very pretty city, but a provincial city. And New York was, after all, the home of abstract expressionism. And those people, when I in the 50s, thrilled me.
But you weren't doing abstract expressionist work, were you?
I was a kid trying to find my way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you got to New York, you co-founded the Judson Gallery with the artist Klaus Oldenburg. What did you want from this gallery?
We just wanted to be famous.
Did you think the gallery would do it for you?
We wanted a venue for our work. And, we were young guys. And we were not interested in being part of the generation ahead of us.
Was it at the Judson Gallery that you created your happenings?
Yes, that's where we made our performances there, and at the Rubin Gallery, which sort of went along hand in hand with it.
Happenings became a kind of demoneyed word. Everything became a happening. What was it when you were doing it?
It was never our word. It was Alan Kaprow's word. And what we considered what we were doing was the artist's theater.
The art as theater?
No, the artist's theater.
Mm-hmm.
And or the painter's theater, whatever. That's what we thought that of as that. But obviously, performance was in the air, and there were few people doing it, including Klaus and I, Red Grooms, and Bob Whitman. And it was essentially theater. It was not painting or sculpture, although it had some of those elements because we were painters and sculptors.
Could you give us a sense of what one of those performances was like?
Well, I made a piece. The first one I made at the Judson was an evening of performances with Oldenburg and Kaprow, and I forget who else. We also were involved with dancers at the time, people who were dancing with Cunningham or had studied with Merce Cunningham and Cage. And there was a lot of that on the program, too. My performance the first time was called The Smiling Workman, and there was a canvas with a light on it in the center of the stage or the center of the room, and it was a black canvas that had some white handprints on it, and I came out and I was made up as a man with a red face and a black mouth, and I started to paint on the canvas some more with the white paint and the red paint. And finally, I drank the paint and threw myself through the canvas. And that was that. And to hear about it is not the same thing as seeing it, obviously. It was very fast, and it was extremely effective.
Was it real paint that you drank?
No, it was tomato juice.
Good. I don't think you'd be here to be telling
exactly,
us about it.
Exactly. I wouldn't be 61.
So this is like the man becomes the art. The man becomes the painter.
It was
the
also that, and also it was about the obsession of working. Mm-hmm. It was called The Smiling Workman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you were pretty obsessive.
Still am.
Right. Now, why did you want to get into the performance aspect of art?
It was a natural extension of what was in the air and of what we were doing. We were making, all of us were using found objects from the street. And it seemed to be the natural progression.
Yeah, you actually went around picking the trash with Klaus Oldenburg, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We did.
What were you looking for? What was considered a good find?
We were just, it had to strike you, you know, just when you saw it. We brought a lot of trash out, I can tell you. But, you know, New York is fabulous for that. Still is.
Would you take something that was visually interesting, even if it was smelly?
I guess so. It was winter. That was easier.
The smelly stuff doesn't grow
right.
as easily.
It was easier.
Now, give us an example of one of your works that came out of picking the trash.
Well, I mean, I found the canvas that I dove through, for instance, on the street. It was probably been used at a theater as a flat. Or, you know, we would find wheels and pieces of wood. We didn't have any money. You know, I was teaching grade school, and he was a librarian at Cooper Union. And we were using this stuff as materials. So there was a lot of wood that we brought. You'd find a baby carriage, you know, and stuff it with wood and take it back to the Judson and just keep on building.
Did you feel like you were getting far away from painting while you were doing this?
Yes, I did.
And did that bother you?
Yes, I stopped making the performances finally. It bothered me, the publicness of it.
The publicness of the performance aspect?
Yes. I mean, I'm always torn that way anyway. I have a deep reclusive side, although I can be gregarious. And it disturbed me that I felt and I still feel that I was put here for this solitary activity. And the crowds were starting to like it too much for me. So I backed out after a year and a half.
Now, something else that you did early in your work, you did a series based on tools. And I still do.
I still use tools. I mean, they're part of my life because, I mean, of my childhood in my grandfather's store. And
hardware store. Your grandfather had a hardware store.
But also with my grandfather. I had a big connection to my grandpa, and he had tools around him at all the time. He wasn't a particularly good craftsman, but he loved to work. And he made them available to me from the time I was about 2 years old. So they were always with me. And I never saw them necessarily as just objects of, you know, to work with. But I saw them as beautiful objects, sculpture, primary objects, things that, anonymous sculpture that developed because somebody wanted to work. So it came from, it was the extension of some guy's hand. And I still find there's a great romance in these tools.
Did you use them at all, these wrenches? And...
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I use them anyway. I mean, I like working with my hands.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Not absurdly.
When you decided that the performances were too public and you didn't want to do them anymore,
right.
What did you do and how did your painting change at that time?
Well, it gave me more time to... When I decided that, I also was, at that time, teaching school, and a dealer offered me the same salary that I was making teaching grade school if I would paint and then give her the paintings. So I was, with alacrity, jumped at that. And so it changed because I had more time to concentrate.
My guest is artist Jim Dine. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with artist Jim Dine. You have a series I really love of flowers and plants,
mm-hmm.
your botanical series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When did you turn to that and what
led you to it? Well, all my life I have. My mother and my grandmother had a great feeling for flowers and... the earth, and my grandma was a kind of farm lady, and she just gave me this feeling for growing things. And then I married a woman who has this strange connection to plants. So
a strange connection to plants?
Yeah, it's a very, I mean, it's strange in the sense that it's not the usual connection to plants, in that it's not necessarily growing. She's just truly connected to plants, so that she looks at them very closely and has taught me many things about them physically. And I'm always drawing plants. I mean, it's not a question of a series. It's something, it's a theme that goes through my life and still is.
Now, I hope you don't mind my bringing this up. I know that your mother passed away when you were 15.
No, I was 12.
Oh, even younger.
Yeah.
So did you feel stranded without her?
Totally. I was shipwrecked. And it was a cruel trick. And informed and colored my whole life. And left me extremely lonely. But I have, through help, been able to get through this veil of tears, as they say.
You'd been very close with her?
Yes, I was very close with her.
And with your father?
No, I was not very close with my father.
Had she been sick?
Yes, she died of cancer.
So you,
and she had been sick for about 4 years, and before that, she was obsessed with getting cancer. So it was just like, and for a little kid, it was like I couldn't believe this. I was always hearing about it, and then suddenly she got it, and then she was dead.
Wow! Did that give you a feeling that premonitions, bad premonitions, really come
all
true?
All that stuff.
Oh. You know. Did you worry about your own health after that?
Yeah, sure. But I worried, I'm more worried about, what I really worried about was how the hell was I going to get through this world?
Well, who helped you?
Well, my grandma did. I went to live with my grandma, and she was and had always been, that was my mother's mother, she had always been this source of absolute pure love for my brother and I, and she really came through. I mean, she was just there for me in high school. And she helped me a lot.
Was this the grandmother on the hardware side of the family or
yes,
the other side of the family?
That was the hardware side of the family.
So,
she was the one who had the relationship to the plants, too.
Oh. So feeling kind of abnormal to begin with, this sense was probably, what, even more heightened when you didn't have your mother anymore.
Exactly. And it made it... It was like an amputation, and it suddenly I was without a young life. I had to grow up or do something to just to get my head above water.
Did your mother tell you that you should expect that she wouldn't be there much longer? And did she give you advice, try to leave
absolutely
you with words
not.
Of wisdom?
Absolutely
she,
no? not. No, absolutely not. It was all denial. Oh. My brother and I weren't even allowed to go to the funeral, so... it was a very curious way to say goodbye.
Why weren't you allowed to go?
I mean, there was some talk that my father said that, you know, it wouldn't be good for the kids. I don't know. It was a very poor decision. And one that affected my brother and I tremendously through the years.
Did you end up in a lot of therapy after all of this?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm highly analyzed.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. Forever.
Do you think that's been helpful?
Tremendous. That and painting saved me.
Right. Yeah, I imagine when you do a self-portrait, it becomes pretty loaded.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But when I do anything, it's pretty loaded because I'm still bringing the same stuff to it. Someone said that most things are self-portraits anyway, and I pretty much believe that.
I believe you have dyslexia?
Yes.
Which is makes it difficult.
Well, whatever it is, you know. I mean, it could be called that, but I think now it's much more specific what people have, you know. But in my day, when I was a kid in school, I was called stupid because I couldn't concentrate. And it was both psychological and physical.
So you found it hard to read?
Very.
Did that help keep you more comfortable in the visual world? Were you, in other words,
I hear what you're saying.
What I'm asking is this, is whatever problem that you had that made it difficult to read, did that problem follow you into the visual world, or were you free of that problem?
I was absolutely free of that problem, but I missed not reading, and it really aggravated me and really frustrated me. And when I turned about 23 years old, I never looked back. I just started to read and forced myself to, and I still do. I mean, I read every day, but I read in different ways. Some days I'm able to read just like everyone else. Other days I read backwards. Other days I start the book backwards. I do what is necessary to get through the book and enjoy it, or to get something from it.
What did you want out of art as a young man compared to what you want out of it now at the age of 61?
Uh-huh. That's a good question. As a young man, I really didn't know what I wanted. I just worked, and I worked at it, and I was gifted, and so I made some things that were pretty good looking at times. I want much more for it now. I want something that's more like a symphony rather than chamber music. I want a big vault.
Does that mean working on a larger canvas too?
Not necessarily, it means working and seeing clearly, and I'm very ambitious for my work, what I can do, and so therefore, I mean, these paintings at Pace now, to me, are. I'm rarely satisfied, but I worked on them so long and so slowly, and so I kept going back to them, and they mean a lot to me. And I'm right now, there's nothing much I'd change in them. I mean, in a year or so, maybe.
Some of the paintings at Pace now they're large, and they require a lot of physical effort. You know, like
I'm very physical.
Yeah, you're pounding and knocking and
well.
They're
grinding.
They're big.
Things.
I mean, they're taller than you
are.
Yeah,
there's a lot to do. Yeah, most things are taller than I am. But I lived with them very closely in Berlin and slept with them. And literally, I mean, in the same room. So that I knew them very well. It was a very intimate experience painting them.
Jim Dine's show of recent paintings is at the Pace Wildenstein Gallery in Manhattan. His retrospective, The Body and Its Metaphors, is touring Japan.